I want to thank everybody for joining us today. My name is Patrick Almond, and you're either on my email list or you're in the Facebook group for Speaker Online Marketing, or you saw the tweets, all the disgusting cross promotion going on all over the place about our webinar today, which is going to be about how to start your own awesome podcast. And for those of you that are just in the GoToWebinar session, I want to remind you that you have a live chat room over at allaboutfocus.com/live, where all of us can collaborate, share links, you can start getting your Q&A out. Basically, you can participate with your host and participate with each other while you're watching the live video over here in GoToWebinar. In front of me today, or in front of you, I guess I should say, you have two of the best looking guys, and then I'm going to join them on this webinar. You're going to have, I think the way I introduced it in the email was it the Honorable Craig Price and Sir Phil Rubishak? Is that how I did it?
Yeah, that's what you said.
That's what I said. So
I'm not British. I can't get a sirhood. Yeah,
I don't know any better.
Yeah.
So our webinar today is going to be pretty informal. I'm going to have these two gentlemen introduce themselves and tell them about their podcast, because these are two of the most experienced guys I know that do podcasting, and we're going to be able to hear them. We're going to kind of just go through a little bit of informal Q&A about basically how to set up a podcast, the things you take in consideration, because a lot of times people get the priorities wrong. They may get hung up on the technical side, where there are soft skills and soft things you need to worry about. And these are the two guys that I think about when I think about how to do a webinar professionally. So why don't we go ahead and get started with introductions. Craig, why don't you start, sir?
My name is Craig Price. I have the Reality Check with Craig Price podcast, and it is a very general, wide topic, variety interview show where I interview someone each week about their topic, their expertise, their philosophy, something interesting on a weekly basis. And I've been able to incorporate that into my speaking business as well as just doing it for my own benefit. I'll be honest with you, I started it because I was kind of selfish, something I wanted to do for myself. And I was able to get somewhat good at it and be able to parlay that into using that to help market events that I'm speaking at, as well as other speakers and friends.
Cool. And Craig, how many episodes have you taped of your podcast?
We do 39 a year. I think we're at 113 because and the new season starts on February 25th. And so we'll do another 30 to 40 this year. We do a couple bonus here and there. And then I also have two other podcasts that I do. One is for charity, which I do for Cigar Peg. For those of you who are in the NSA speaking, National Speaker Association, you know Cigar Peg is a charity that raises money for the foundation for speakers. And then I also do, which is called Cigar Peg Radio. So if you check that out on iTunes, it's brand new. We've had guests like Larry Winget, Alan Weiss. We're going to have Bruce Turkle, Sally Hoghead. So we got some high name, high quality folks over there. And then I also do a almost a client-like relationship with Stephanie Vance. I do the Advocacy Hotline podcast with Stephanie Vance, where we talk about her expertise on a weekly basis. Basically, we answer one question a week about advocacy, politics, and how you can get involved and how you can get your representatives to help you and your cause and your organization.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow, you've got so like four or five podcasts going on, it sounds like.
I have three right now, and I'm constantly going on things like with Phil's got. Other people are always having me on as guests, so I get around, so to speak.
Gotcha. And Phil, tell us about yourself, sir.
Sure. My name's Phil Gerbishak. I'm headquartered in beautiful downtown Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My current podcast vehicle is also a video cast. It's called The Shut Up Show that I do with Bernie Chung. It's fantastically fun. We teach brave entrepreneurs to shut up and make shit happen. That's our tagline, and it's about fighting through the fear. Craig has been a guest on our show. Thank you, my friend. It's a lot of fun. We're on 88 episodes already. We've only been doing it since May. We do about two a week. So I say about because we typically go from 2 to 3 Central Time live via Google Hangouts on Tuesdays, but often guests need other time. So some weeks we might do 5 or 6, but we don't post them all right away. They go out. We try to do about 2 a week, and then Bernie and I also do some recorded backstage stuff as well to kind of fill in some gaps and to celebrate milestones, to do a retrospective as well as a forward looking on that. And biggest, coolest thing about it is we just did our first live Google Hangout last week, Tuesday. So we'll talk
about that. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Good deal. Okay, we the three of us did some loose preparation ahead of time when it came to podcasting. I think the three of us kind of agree that maybe the soft skills should probably be the first thing that we cover, and maybe just even a basic question, which I'll start with you, Phil, and then we'll go back to Craig on it, is to why should somebody even begin to podcast? Why did you even begin to podcast? And maybe kind of what value have you gotten out of it?
Sure. Well, I started my first podcast, I want to say, back in like 2006, 2007, actually on a show called The Great Big Small Business Show. We were talking about small business, and the biggest reason that I found podcasts work for me is because I don't like to do a lot of prep. I like to talk about stuff that I've experienced, and I like to do that with somebody else. Now, I've tried to do shows by myself, but I find that having a guest is best, but having a co-host is even better. So everything that I've been successful at has been with more people. So why is, first, it's less prep for me. I certainly can have more. My co-host, Bernie, does an amazing job of getting really into who the person is. But I try to react to what they have to say, which that's why, again, a co-host works for me. Secondly, more and more people are listening to podcasts, with just about everybody that I know having one or more smartphones. It makes sense to reach that audience, and you don't have to be paying any attention to me to hear what I have to say. So that's the second reason. And the third reason is simply because it's fun, you know, and I get to learn from great guests. I get smart people on. Like I said, we had Craig on. I learned a lot from Craig. We've had some other smart folks. Carrie Lorenz, who's one of my favorite people in the whole world, the first female F-14 fighter pilot. I got to talk to Carrie about her fear as doing that, and other smart entrepreneurs. So it grows my business by making me smarter and helping me learn new things that I had never even thought about. And when I'm coaching folks, it helps me do a better job of coaching because now I have a little bit more perspective.
And I'll
go ahead.
What I did is I started because, you know, I wanted to. Well, I got stuck in a situation where, as a speaker, I couldn't speak. I had a situation with a surgery, and that's how I found out about podcasts in the first place. And when I started to listen to them, I started to get interested in doing it. It's something, like Phil said, I do it firstly because I enjoy it. And that's the first thing I would tell anybody who's going to start doing podcasting, is that if you don't like it, if you don't like going on video, don't do a video podcast. That's why I do not do a video podcast. Also, it's a lot easier for me personally to do an audio podcast because I don't have to worry about bandwidth and all this other stuff. I can do a lot of them in person. He does his show live. I pre-record mine because I travel a lot, and so I can't be somewhere every week. So what I'll do is I'll go to the NSA convention, Speaker Association convention. I'll go to conferences that I'm at, and I'll stockpile. I'll record 3, 5, 10 at a time and stockpile them, so I have something on a consistent basis. So I started to do something I had something to say. I'm a speaker. So the best way for me to talk and get my point of view out is to speak. That's the best way to express my ideas. So I did that. But then my topic is a very niche topic, and I know it so well that while, yes, I want to share it, I thought that doing a weekly podcast on negativity, which is what I speak on, I would get tired of that within a month or two. So I completely went 360, 180 and decided I was going to interview people that I wanted to learn from and things and topics that I was interested in. So my podcast is very non-niche. It's the least niche podcast that I know of. I go to FBI agents, orangutan rescue, entrepreneurship, online marketing, publishing. I'm going to be speaking to the director of the Houston Zoo tomorrow. So these all these things that I'm interested in that I hope that other people are interested in as well, so they learn something new every week. And by doing that, that has expanded my network. I'm a very introverted person. I'm pretty good in person, and I'm fine when I'm supposed to be. It's time to be extroverted.
Right.
But I'm not a networking person, so I don't go out of my way to meet folks. This has forced me to get out of my comfort zone. Because first I start off with my network. That's how you usually do podcasts. If you're going to do interviews, mm-hmm. you're going to start with your network. And once that ran out, I realized I've got to expand past that. So now I run into the most unique and these individuals that you never would expect to meet in person. Now they have a relationship with me, and my network has expanded because of that. And the last thing I use it for is, since I've learned how to do this, what I started to do was take my podcasting into my business, which means when I'm going to be at a conference, and most of the time I'm usually the keynote, so I'm the main person, and then there's 10, 15, 30 breakout sessions. I will look at the schedule, figure out if there's anybody on there doing a breakout that would be worth interviewing, and then I will interview them about a month in advance and start using those interviews to get interest for those breakout sessions. I'm the keynoter. I don't need people to show up to my keynote session. They're all going to be. But if I can use it to promote the other breakout sessions, then send it to the meeting planners to let them distribute it on their network, they see two things. They see that you are invested and that you want to be there and that you're doing everything you can to promote the conference, but also that you're also helping out these other speakers. You're trying to get people excited for the conference in general. So those two things really has helped me not secure the first-timers, but it definitely brings me back to conferences because they know I'm going to do a good job and I'm also going to promote their conference as best as I can.
Gotcha. So that kind of leads into my next question. You basically kind of already answered it. The inherent value to your business, and for you, Craig, what it is it's become part of the Craig package now. You're not just a keynote speaker. You're going to get pre-conference interviews, pre-conference podcasts, possibly on-site podcasts. So it's just part of the whole package you get now when you hire Craig. Does that sound about right?
It's an added value, yes. It's an unexpected option that they get because I really don't tell the meeting planner ahead of time because you never know who your guests are going to be. And so I can't, since I'm not picking the speakers, the breakouts, I don't know who's going to be really good at an interview versus a breakout session. They may be great speakers at a training site, but once they get on the phone or when they get on an interview situation, they kind of freak out a little bit. I think Phil, you've probably been there a couple times where your guest is kind of freaked out. They seem fine, and then all of a sudden you click and we're ready to roll, and they're kind of goofy. So once I have a really good one, then I'll send it to the meeting planner, and they recognize the fact that I'm willing to take that extra step to find the speaker, the breakout that I think will actually draw people to the conference. So gotcha. It's added my business that way. Otherwise, I actually do it more for myself. I do it because I enjoy it, and it's one of those where I'm not the greatest business person, I'm not the greatest marketing person, but I'm a fairly good podcaster. I enjoy doing it on a regular basis, and it seems to be helpful as a byproduct. So it's just, hey, if I have fun doing it and it actually kind of helps, why not do it?
Gotcha. Okay. So Phil, how about your business? What has podcasting contributed and what value has it brought to your speaking business and your consulting business?
Sure. Well, I would say from a speaking business, it certainly adds to credibility that they can see me on camera and see that not just can I get up and do a breakout, do a keynote, do a training, whatever, but they also see that I'm a human being, that I can actually talk to their people, because I know sometimes, you know, they worry that, oh, people are one way on stage and they're another way off. So I have 88 episodes. I'm very congruent with who I am everywhere that I am. Probably a little bit, actually, maybe a little more goofy in person, but that's simply because I get energy from other people, and sitting by myself, I don't get as much juice from. So from the speaking business, it's helped with that. From the consulting, the fact is it's another mark in Google that shows that Phil knows what he's talking about. So I do social media consulting and teach people how to better leverage social media to raise their visibility. And the fact that I can do a podcast really with little prep, because typically we're talking about stuff that I already know. And by that, I don't necessarily mean that I'm an expert in it, but I understand entrepreneurism. Right, I've had my own business almost 10 years, so I get this, and I understand some of the basics. I mean, I understand your exact business, but I understand enough so I can ask questions, and then it also shows that I can pay attention. So when my clients, you know, when they're curious, oh, well, it's still going to cater to my needs, it's very clear if you watch my show that everyone is different. We're not asking the same questions. We've got a couple of standard questions, but I'm intensely curious about those, just like I'm intensely curious about those in my business. So it helps with that. And then probably the last thing is it provides great content then for my newsletters and for my other social media channels, because I can share anything that I do in a variety of ways, and we can rip it apart, pull 2 minutes here and 3 minutes there. I can pull one idea out, pull one quote out, and it really helps show that that there's more value than just, hey, here's an interview, but really, hey, here's some good nuggets that you didn't know about how you might look at your business. And it helps me provide some additional context and relate best to my clients and prospects.
Gotcha. So that's the value to each one of your podcasts. And I think by the way, I want to take a quick break and just say that for those of you that have joined the GoToWebinar session, our room keeps filling up. People keep joining the more we're talking. We also have a live chat room at allaboutfocus.com/live. We can come over here. All three of us are sitting there. We can answer questions while the other person's talking, and you can drop your own comments, your own experience with podcasts there. Let's move a little bit more over into the format of the podcast, because the two of you do things just maybe a little bit differently. It sounds like Craig does it one way and Phil does it one way. Phil, why don't you start here and talk about the format that you prefer and why? And I want to hear Craig's opinion on the same thing.
Sure. So we use Google Plus Live Hangouts. The technical term is Google Hangouts on Air. And what that does is that generates a live feed like this. So we'd have three abreast only on Google Hangouts, little pictures in the bottom instead of three this way.
Right.
And our format is quite simple. We have a guest. I do a quick intro to who they are. Bernie does a way more in-depth intro on who they are. We ask them how they got there. Then we start right away peppering them with talk about fear. Talk about who you are. Talk about what fears you've overcome, what fears you have in your business, and we go right into the meat, and then we wrap that up with what the heck's happening now. Of course, there's other questions in there, and it's really meant to be the video cast. That's the format that we start with, and that seems to be the best way. And then we migrate that then to an MP3 to podcast from there, and we are still catching up. I think we have maybe 20 or 30 episodes, and we're able to do them now live, and then we go back and catch up a few on the back end, because those take work. I mean, editing a podcast, and it's not a lot of work. Once you get used to it, you have a standard intro, you might have a standard outro, and you might do some standard clips, and you can see where the gaps are. So if there's a dead space, you can quickly yank those out. But that's our format, and then we post that on our blog. So two times on the blog, once with the video and then once with the podcast. So all of our guests get a lot of love social media-wise from us, as well as on our website.
Gotcha. And what utility, just out of curiosity, is there a particular utility that you recommend people when you go from the video to the MP3? Is there a particular website or utility you favor there?
Yeah. So I'm a Mac guy. I use Ecamm, E-C-A-M-M, Ecamm Recorder, ecamm.com. I think it's $30 or $40, and it's actually, I download the MP4 from YouTube, and you'll see there's an option for download. You download it, and then I can just drag and drop it onto part of the Ecamm product that actually says convert movie to MP3, and then it's done. That's all I do. Now, if as a, PC guy, Audacity, or there are free websites, if you Google turn YouTube video into MP3, there's actually websites that will do that. You can download it, and it's seriously just click, 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 about five clicks, and it does it for you. So you don't have to be really technical. Ecamm, again, drag and drop. I can be technical, but I'd rather not. I'd rather spend my cycles on something else.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks for that. And I know, Craig, I've seen your little bit of a setup. You don't just travel around with a little MP3 recorder. You're a pretty serious guy. Talk about the format you prefer, maybe some of the hardware that you recommend and software you recommend.
Well, before I start talking about the technical stuff about format, one of the important things about format, is, especially when you're doing a podcast, is what can you do versus what can't you do. Set up your format to fit what you're able to get done. Two examples. One is my Reality Check podcast is a one-on-one interview. Now, when I started, it was face-to-face. I tried to do it as face-to-face as much as possible. I'm much more comfortable face-to-face. I can get visual cues. You can tell when people are about to stop or about to start or want to continue on. with a point or a comment. But then I had to evolve into, oh, I can't be everywhere all the time. So then I started to do Skype interviews. And I can record Skype interviews. And like I said, everything I do is so I can fill up my queue, and so I can don't have to worry four weeks down the road, 6 weeks down the road, do I have to scramble for guests? So my format for a reality check was one-on-one interview. So I was using Skype. I use a recorder called Pretty May. But also, I do Advocacy Hotline with Stephanie Vance. Totally different format, because she can't be in a studio or have a nice quality sound. A lot of the time, she's recording from a phone in a hotel room because she's a busy speaker who travels. So we made that format a call-in. That's why it's called the hotline. Basically, we come up with some questions. Each week I will ask a question, and so what I'll do is I sound perfect because I have my setup at the studio, so I will talk to the audience, I'll explain what's happening, and then I will call, quote-unquote, call the hotline. And so that way I don't have to worry about sound quality on Stephanie's end because people know I'm using the phone. So now all of a sudden, if there is some sound issues, it's, oh, that would happen if I called in the hotline anyways. So one-on-one interviews, is that something you want to do? Do you have access to a buddy? Phil has an unbelievable co-host. Bernie's fantastic. And they get to share a lot of the responsibilities. They also get to share their networks. So they've got twice, probably 10 times the network connections that I have. So you can kind of divvy up the work. But if you're by yourself, now you have to figure out, am I going to do it, the format, is it going to be able to have a guest every week? Is it going to be a monologue? There are podcasts where people just do monologues. They just talk into the microphone for 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Now, sometimes you go, oh, my God, that sounds awful. But very creative, very funny, very talented folks can do that. I prefer more interaction, so that now I'm going to do interviews. So now I have to make sure that I know that, since I'm doing a one-on-one, I have to make sure that the format fits that particular one. Some people have round tables. They consistently have 3 to 4 people every week. So do you have the capability to do that as far as technical aspects? So when you think about format, I think it's really important to focus on what you do well and what can you do. And that will dictate what format will work best for you.
Gotcha. Okay. And did you touch on the credibility issue at all with having a podcast?
One of the things I want to talk about that Phil mentioned is that about the credibility is you don't have to know everything. In fact, having access gives you credibility. So Phil has access to unbelievably talented and smart folks on his podcast. Do they think, oh, well, Phil's an idiot. He just happens to have these people on? Well, maybe a couple, but only
they
the
do,
ones
Craig.
That know you, Phil. Only the ones
That's
that know
right.
you.
Only my friends.
But when they look up, when they think of Phil, they think Phil knows about entrepreneurship because he has access to all these people, and they wouldn't talk to Phil unless he knew something. So I think a lot of people get hung up on the, oh, I got to know everything to do this. I don't want my competitors in charge or in around or involved. In fact, this is a great chance to get your competitors involved. Have them on your show. It builds your credibility because they are on your show. It's the Shut Up Show with Phil and Bernie. It's not the Shut Up Show with your expert. So it really builds credibility just by having access.
And it also helps with internet credibility, too. If you think about it, hopefully they will share the guest with their the interview with their network. So it automatically says, even if they are your competitor, they kind of at least endorse your show. They might not endorse you, but by promoting themselves, they're promoting you. And conversely, right, if you're promoting them, you're promoting them as well, which is good. I mean, the more you can expand it, the goal is to backpack on other people, other people's audience, not just your own. I mean, if all I could reach was the 12 people that I know, I'd have a really boring life. Instead, right, like this, I get to talk to Craig's people, I get to talk to Patrick's people, all the people here. Some people join because of me, some people join for other reasons. So it's an opportunity to get in front of people I might never otherwise meet. And if I pick up, you know, 1% of those new people, that's 1% more that I had. And if I keep doing that consistently, you know, 100 episodes, you get 100% more people.
Gotcha. That's a very good point. One of the things I was going to touch on real quick is that you mentioned the competition thing. There, if you play it right with partnering up with people and with finding what people do that unique, that are unique. I don't even almost believe in that word competition anymore. You first of all, you can't compete with me unless you're 6 foot tall and you're Patrick Allman. There's no competition for me. But the number of customers, potential customers we have in the world, the number of people that want to hear us deliver our message our way is, it's not quite limitless, but you know, it's in the millions and billions. So I don't see, some guy could sit exactly next to me and do the exact same thing I'm doing, and it still wouldn't be competition to me. So I'm not worried about it. But I love the fact that you brought in, that you could bring in your competition, and they may not advocate you, but they're going to push out your podcast and talk about the fact that they were on there, because it helps both of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Help everybody.
Gotcha. Let's get a little bit, I think what some of the people are probably coming on board for is to talk about some of the tools. And Craig, I'm going to start with you. Sometimes I think people don't get involved with podcasting because it just seems like it's very complicated. It's very hard. There are so much out there. I'm sure, Craig, that you have like a big giant recording studio in one of the back bedrooms, right? With the padded walls and tons of cables and a big giant 32 track mixing board. That's what you have, right, Craig?
That's it right here.
This what costs is that?
$85. That is a little mixing board just for one microphone. I've gone through some equipment, but that's just more my personal taste. In fact, you have I think you've got a Blue Yeti right there, don't you? Is that your big one, a Blue Yeti?
Yeah, that's my big Blue Yeti. I'm not using it for this podcast right now, but this is $99, and it's the best microphone I've ever had in my life. And I've done some recording studio work. And the thing is god awful heavy, so you know it works good in an alley too, if you need it in an alley.
And it's a USB. So I think a lot of people get concerned that it's going to be real complicated, and all you really need is a USB microphone and something to record on. In fact, I know some people can record on your iPhones. Dana Steele, who's a speaker that some of you may know, she does a podcast that's really basically she does a voice recorder on her iPhone. And then you can just take that file and upload it. There is GarageBand for Mac that's free. There's Audacity on Windows that's free. There are free tools out there, so it's not this complicated situation. If you don't really edit that much, and quite frankly, I don't edit that much. What I do is I do an intro up front. There's a little music interlude. Then there's the interview itself, which I do not edit because I find it's too tedious. What am I editing? Ums and ahs. And if you have a good speaker, ums and ahs are not that big of a deal if they're good speakers. Now, if you're talking to a guy at Toastmasters, that may be an issue. But most regular folks, if they know how to communicate, it's going to be a fine interview, and only rarely do you have to edit, and then you have a little outro. So I think the complication is that people think it's complicated because they do see some of what I call the nerd podcasters who have the huge mixing board. If you'd seen what I took to NSA this year, because I did a round table of 6 folks, I had a huge mixing board that's the size of a small suitcase. That's the only way at the time that I knew how to do that. But you can get a digital recorder. I have an H4N Zoom digital recorder that allows XLR microphones. There's a new one that's just out called the H6N that allows 4 XLR inputs. You can buy a cartridge, you can have 6 XLR inputs, and it's about... you know, it's about that big,
right?
And you can take it anywhere you go. So I started off with a bunch of complicated machinery, and I've learned over time that really what I need is just a digital recorder that I can take the SD card of, stick it in my laptop, and edit. And you can use all kinds of editing software. Some are free, some's a little more complicated. It's not as difficult as you think. There's an app on iPhone called BossJock, 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 that allows you to record podcasts and then upload it to your server from the application. So the podcasting is becoming easier, it's becoming mobile, and it's becoming a situation where you don't have to buy all this equipment.
Gotcha. Real quick before I head it over to you, Phil, I was going to say I discovered one recently. I don't know if one of you discovered this, called Auphonic, AUPHONIC. It's on my phone right here. And it's specifically made to record, clean up audio, and then post it to the Auphonic website. And the Auphonic website then does some more cleanup, adds your intro automatically, adds your outro automatically, and then will in turn upload it to your website.
Yeah, I've heard of Auphonic. I have not used it personally, so I couldn't say anything. But BossJock I've used, I've seen in action, so I can say that's pretty good. But I have definitely heard of Auphonic. I believe they made the Leveler, which is this post-cleanup that they do that makes everything sound great, and levels the noise, so in case someone's louder, everything's equal. It's really good. And something's going to happen in 6 months that's going to make it even easier. So just remember, it's getting easier, not harder.
I bet you pretty soon you're just going to be able to be wearing a Google Glass and tap the side and record your podcast and then tap it and it's gone. That's where Google Glass is going. Phil, what about your tool set? What do you recommend in terms of hardware and software for someone that just wants to get started, that may be concerned they got to spend, you know, $500 or $600 to get started?
Yeah, well, the first thing is, if you are a Mac person, it is super duper easy. You can use Hangouts and Air. It will cost you nothing other than the Mac that you have because all the tools are built in. You can use the YouTube built-in video editor. You can download that. Ecamm is the tool that I mentioned as well. That's $30. That will record Skype calls as well. So that will offer both there. Auphonic looks really cool, Patrick. Thanks for that recommendation. On the PC, if you're a PC person, there's a product called Audacity that is also free, or Sony Vegas, which is, depending if you get on sale, it's anywhere between $80 and $280, depending which version you get. The cheapest one is better. I'll tell you though, Audacity, it's free because it's simple, because it works. So anything that, think about simple, don't think about complicated. I mean, like Craig mentioned, you can plug in multiple voices if you use some piece of hardware that's great. But honestly, this is my hardware. I got a $30 headset, okay? And actually, I find, even if you're on a PC, I find that the best headset is actually Apple's. This is not my Apple headset, but it works really well. I can record right into my iPhone if I want. I can also do telephone calls using like freeconferencecall.com or something like that, and then grab the MP3. And that's free. Some of them are like $9 or $10 a month. There's limits with that, but it's, don't be complicated. Don't get hung up on all of that. You need to focus on what's important. So go simpler. Don't go more difficult.
Gotcha. And one of the things we've both mentioned, or you mentioned Audacity a couple times. One of the things I like about Audacity is they make it for the Mac and the PC. So if you're one of those people that's considering switching platforms, and you're afraid of the software investment for Audacity, which is nothing, it's free. It works the same. I've used it on the Mac and the PC. And to take it one step further, with Audacity, I used to take that into an actual radio station with me. I had an over-the-air radio show here in Oklahoma City, and I would take a laptop with me and my big honkin' Blue Yeti, and I would fire up Audacity in the beginning, and I would record the entire thing. And then, you know, I would clean it up, and I still have those MP3s later, but I'd have two microphones in front of me, the radio station microphone hanging up here, and then my laptop and here, and I have a live chat room, and it was just the radio station guys would just come and look in the window every time. It's like, that guy brings all of his own hardware, and it's, you know, just as, maybe not just as good as ours, but it's pretty close to as good as theirs. So hardware, so would you say that it's possible to get into podcasting with, what would say the minimum investment? Can someone start podcasting with $0 out of pocket?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, you could. You can do it.
Gotcha.
As long as you have a microphone of some sort, and you can use the webcam microphone in a Google Hangout. So, absolutely. There's really nothing holding anybody back from podcasting who wants to podcast. That's the key thing. If you want to do it, it's really easy to do. It's just a matter of going to Google Hangouts if you want to start it that way. Or if you do want to, like me, I'm kind of a perfectionist kind of guy, so I wanted to make sure I had good sound and good things at all times, so I just invested in some equipment, but it was very minimal. I'm not super rich, so for me to go out and invest like several $100s in the podcasting equipment is ridiculous, especially since I don't use my podcast to directly make money. It's not, I don't have a subscription service. I don't sell ads and sponsorships. It's really, I do it because I like to do it, and I do it to promote myself and my friends. So I try to spend as little as possible. I think I spend most of my money on the server that I host my website, my files on, which is, even then, is not that big a deal. It's $15 a month investment, and it can be less for people who have shorter shows.
Gotcha. And good point, Craig. Can you touch on that a little bit further? Let's go into, okay, once you've got the hardware and the software, and you've got the file created, rather than just keeping it on your machine, which is not going to get you any distribution at all. What do you recommend, or what's a good tool set that after you have it recorded and you have it cleaned up to get it out to the world? How do you host a podcast? I guess that's my question is, what's the best place to do it after you've got it all cleaned up and you're ready to go?
Well, I would recommend if you think your podcast is going to hit it at all and get listeners or viewers, I would recommend not doing it on your own server, because you think, oh, it's going to be on my website, but what happens is bandwidth issues can come in and really knock people into a big time situation. Because say you have a huge guest that you can't believe you got, like I got Patrick Almond on my show, so I'm going to get 2,000 people in the first hour downloading it. Well, next thing you know, I've got a $4,000 bill due from my server because my bandwidth went way out of control, and so that cost me money. So what I use for more than just the bandwidth issue is Libsyn, Libsyn, Libsyn.com. In fact, I did a podcast with LC Escobar of Libsyn. I strongly believe in them as a server because they go by how much you upload in a month. So it doesn't matter how many downloads you get. So if you get 5 downloads or you get 5 million downloads, it will not cost you anything different. It's just a matter of what is the space? Well, if your podcast is 30 megabytes an episode, you know, and that's 4 weeks, that's 120 megs. So you probably want to get the 150 megabyte thing in the 30-day period. And then as soon as the first of the month comes along, you're back to zero. Do they delete your files? Absolutely not. They're there. It's just a monthly rotating kind of situation, which is great. So once you finally get the format down, and you know, mine's a 30-minute podcast, so I know my podcast will never get larger than 30 meg. I can start hosting them. They do great for statistics, so I can tell where my podcasts are being downloaded from, because iTunes does not tell you that. So I will tell you how many hits I get. I can tell you where in the world they are, in which episode. It's their stats are very good. But also, if you're new and you're not tech savvy, they have a back office that allows you to. It's like almost like writing a blog. You type in the notes, you do all your keywords, and then you hit the hard drive button that uploads the thing, and then boom, their feed is iTunes ready. So all you have to do is submit their feed into iTunes, and there you go. You've got an iTunes ready. You don't have to worry about is it going to work or not, because that's their job. That's the only thing they do is cater to podcasts, and they cater to some of the largest podcasts in the world. Adam Carolla, Mark Maron, they're all entertainment podcasts, but these are people that get thousands if not millions of downloads, so they know how to handle it. But I like to get a little more control. I know you're a control freak when it comes to analytics, Patrick, so I host it on Libsyn, and then I go through WordPress, which my site is on WordPress, and I use what is called Blueberry, B-L-U-B-R-R-Y, no E, there's no E's in there, and it allows me to, I upload to the server on Libsyn, I use that MP3 link that they give me, and then I create a blog with all my keywords and my SEO and my iTunes situation. Is it clean? Is it explicit? Is it this? Is it that? And then I've submitted my feed, my RSS feed from my website to iTunes. So all I have to do is do the little blog posting, SEO special. It looks great on my website, but then boom, I hit update and it updates in iTunes automatically. So you can do it all in one spot. It sounds more complicated than it is. Once you get it installed, if you know anything about WordPress, if you know anything about posting a blog on WordPress, you can post a podcast.
Gotcha. How about you, Phil? Outside the tools that Craig mentioned, what do you like as far as the actual hosting side of it? I mean, Craig brought up most of the more popular tools, but I'm sure you've probably used some that he hasn't brought up before.
Yeah, well, let me just say, I tried to put it on my own website, and it sucks. It does drag everything down, and it doesn't work, because it'll end up with your website crashing or taking a really long time to load if they try to preload stuff. So to Craig's point, having it in two different places, while it seems more complicated, actually makes it simpler for you and will result in less problems. Anywhere that you can host an MP3, you can host that if you can get a feed out of there. So Amazon S3 is a good answer for a lot of folks. And it's like 20 cents a gigabyte, I think. It's very, very, very reasonable. Anywhere that you can do that is certainly recommended. Things have changed. Things are continuing to change. Libsyn's been around a long time. I'm actually disappointed in myself that I didn't use them before because they're really simple, and they have a built-in stuff that makes it easy. The reason that I like WordPress for my website as well is because the podcast category then creates its own RSS feed, and it makes it really, really simple on my website to see all the different podcasts. So I really recommend being consistent with that, and it might seem like, well, duh, of course I am. But if you notice something isn't working for you, go back and check even the most basic of settings. Do you have the right category? Do I have the right length? Do I have enough space in my account? Just basic stuff like that. To Craig's point, once you understand that you have a 30-minute podcast, most of the time it's going to be about the same size unless you have multiple guests because you might have multiple a little bit bigger or a little bit smaller. So just take a look. Be consistent. That's where having that consistent format, consistent length is really going to take some of the guesswork out of that. Blueberry, definitely the best solution out there. There's other ones, but those work. I mean, if you're not finding success, just search for podcasts. The other thing that I'll tell you is that, remember, in addition to iTunes, there's also one called Stitcher Radio that you want to make sure that you get your cast into. Stitcher Radio is platform agnostic, and it actually works on your TV, and they're actually building that into a lot of the smart TVs now. So if you want to expand your audience, make sure you use Stitcher as well, and it has a built-in player, unlike iTunes, that you have to go through and use your iTunes to play.
Actually, with Stitcher, one of the plans for Stitcher is to get those into cars. So once you have your podcast, and you can listen to it in your car, which most people listen to podcasts in their car, and that's one of the things I know someone, Sierra, asked about the audio versus video. The reason why I do an audio podcast is because I like to do it, and I don't want to have to get all gussied up like I did today with my purple all-focus shirt on.
Thanks for putting clothes on, Craig.
Yeah. But I don't have to sit and watch a video, an audio podcast. I can put that in my ears and go on the treadmill. I can take it in my car. I don't have to look at it to do that. So that's why I prefer audio, only because it's actually more mobile. I know you can watch video on your phone, but you can't watch a video on your phone when you're driving, or at least you shouldn't be. But you can listen to a podcast. So the best way to do it is to just find out what your audience prefers. If your audience prefers video, and I'm sure Phil, as good-looking as he is and as good-looking as Bernie is, people will sit and watch them. But Patrick and I, we have to go audio at times. So it's a matter of how your audience wants to consume you is probably the best way. And the fact that Phil does it both ways, video and audio, shows that he's actually listening and paying attention to his audience, who not necessarily can sit down and watch the video all the time because they may be busy.
Gotcha. Okay, so I think the two most important points I picked up recently is, one, pay attention how your audience wants to consume you. Out of context, that would actually seem very bad. And number two, you said I can't watch video podcasts when I'm driving?
Yeah. I'm sure you can, Patrick, but then we'll all go to your early, early funeral.
Gotcha. Okay.
So,
Craig, one of the things we touched on a little bit earlier, just a little bit, and I want you to go a little bit more in depth on, is can you talk about, first of all, is consistency important or not? I'm going to ask your opinion on this also, Phil. How important consistency is, but also, is there any time when you maybe would advise somebody against podcasting? What is a topic or a situation where someone would say, you know what, maybe it's not the right time or the right situation for me to be podcasting? So, Craig, why don't you start with the question about how important is consistency?
Well, consistency kind of relates to those of why you shouldn't do a podcast.
Okay.
If you don't have the time to commit to it, if you are really busy and you can only do one whenever, that's going to be an issue. Think of your podcast like a TV show. So if your favorite show is CSI, and they randomly put CSI up once a week on Thursdays, and all of a sudden it didn't show up for 3 weeks, and then it came out on a Wednesday, and then it came out on a Monday, and we've all seen that happen in TV, and what happens? Those TV shows get canceled because nobody watches. I know that the podcasts are available at all times, and that's the great thing about them, but listeners want to know on Tuesday at 7 a.m. there's a new Reality Check, or at least sometime on Tuesday they're going to get a new podcast. Because the number one complaint will always be, where are you? Where's the show this week? Because if you start showing that you don't care, all of a sudden they'll lose interest. And it doesn't matter what your time frame is. If you do it once a month, that's fine. Just make sure to do it once a month on the same day. So if you're going to do it on the third of the month, make sure every third of the month there's a podcast. It's about consistency. See, Phil does two a week, which I could see doing, but for me, I'm scrambling around. That would drive me crazy personally as far as a producer. But I listen to podcasts that come out twice a week, and I kind of get upset when I look at my queue and I don't have anything because they went on vacation or they weren't ready or something happened. So if you don't have the time to put into podcasting, I certainly don't recommend doing it, and I certainly don't recommend doing it just because you think it's going to help your SEO or it's going to help you this way or that way. You have to enjoy it, because if it becomes rote, if it becomes a chore, it comes through. You are being projected directly into people's brains. It becomes a very intimate experience. Like Phil was saying very early, they get to know Phil, and they get to like Phil. And all of a sudden, if it starts to see that Phil doesn't really care, and he's asking mundane, boring questions, or you can tell there's no energy there anymore, there's so many other options, they will go somewhere else.
Gotcha. So carrying that consistency question over to you, Phil, how do you do that? Not only do you have the consistency issue, you're managing multiple podcasts in a week. How do you handle all that and make sure that you always have something every single week, no matter whether you're traveling, no matter whether you have, five speaking engagements? How do you keep up that consistency?
Yeah, so two things. One, that's one of the reasons that I have a co-host, because there are times I can't do it. So that means Bernie does it. Otherwise, we'll record ahead. We might do six episodes in a week. That will happen. The next point is you have to put it on your calendar. And I know that sounds kind of simple, but if you put it on your calendar, and I have a recurring appointment until like 2020 that we're going to do these from 2 to 3 every Tuesday. It's in my calendar. Guess what? I don't block stuff over the top of it. Nothing else gets booked. I don't go to the doctor that time. I don't go to the dentist. I typically don't have speaking engagements on Tuesdays unless they're in town and unless they get done by noon, because that just doesn't work for me, because this is important. It's a big deal. So if you're going to do it, you need to commit. You need to be all in. You need to make this important. And you can do like Craig does. I mean, if you just want to do a podcast, you can absolutely just do a podcast. Craig could be done for the year if he wanted to be. I mean, he could record 100 episodes in a couple of days. That could absolutely happen if that's important. So my biggest thought about consistency is just commit. Commit. You know that it's a commitment to yourself. It's a commitment to your viewers, your listeners. It's a commitment to your co-host. And ultimately, it's a commitment to your business, because if you're not committed, why the heck are you doing it?
Good. Very, very good point. Go ahead, Phil.
I was going to say, it's not difficult to stick into your workflow. It's just a matter. It's just like a regular appointment. Me, I know that Fridays are always light unless I'm traveling. So Friday afternoon is empty. It's not empty. It's not appointable. You cannot make an appointment on Friday afternoons with me, because what I'm doing every week, now that I have three podcasts that I'm in charge of, Friday afternoon is just editing, getting the MP3s ready, and getting the blog post, the notes, all that stuff ready for the three podcasts that come out on Monday and Tuesdays. This allows me to, wind down from the week. All I'm doing is really kind of listening and editing a little bit, and it allows me to think about what I want to write in my posts that will get the SEO going, but also explain what the guest is to draw attention, and then that's what I do. So until Friday afternoon, I've committed. If I'm in town, that's where I am, as I'm sitting in front of the computer listening to the recordings I've done and getting those podcasts ready for air. And if it's not, if I'm busy on a Friday, then I just make it a Thursday. It's just a matter of adjusting. But just like Phil, a consistent calendar date is blocked out on Fridays afternoon, so I can commit to this.
Gotcha. Now, at about 45 after the hour, we're in the transition of the Q&A, but we're kind of already going into that. And our good friend Roger Corville wanted to talk a little bit about I think he has had a question about bumpers. That's one I always like, and I'm kind of curious your opinion on that. But I'm going to give mine real quick. I have learned that Fiverr is a really good place if you want to get some done, because and if you want to, you can upsell some of those guys that record the really good radio ones, because they'll do like a better one for like $10 or $15. I had a quote on one recently to get a really high quality one done, intro and an outro. I think for both of them, he was going to do $25 one time, and it would be. I'm looking forward to that because, first of all, I want you guys to know I am so guilty of that podcast inconsistency. And one of the things I get when I'm around smart people is to make sure I follow up and I hold myself accountable for that. And so one of the things I want to do is I want to get those bumpers done and then connect that to that Allphonic account. So when I record my podcast, it just tacks them on there and then uploads them. So Phil, in your case, when you think about getting some of those accessory things done, like maybe, you know, sponsorship voiceovers or intros or outros, how do you normally get those done for your shows?
Well, Fiverr is great. That's who we used to do the intro to the Shut Up Show. $5. It was great. Works really easy. We're going to start doing, though, more of us recording those. So I'll do the intro on some. Bernie will do the intro on some. And as we grow, absolutely adding another voice just to break it up, because it could be monotonous if you get the same voice. That's one of the reasons why two voices plus a third, you know, you hear that change. If you're listening to this, right, you see that there's a difference between Patrick's voice and my voice and Craig's voice. All different. That works out pretty well. So Fiverr's great. Otherwise, if you're a speaker, ask your friends. Ask your friends, you know. I mean, and then give them a plug. Hey, Craig, will you do the intro for episode 100 and just be your silly self, right? And of course, if Craig needs me to do him a solid, I would, right? This is easy stuff. So don't be shy. Use your network. And it's good. It's good sample for everybody. And don't be afraid to spend a few bucks, but you don't have to spend a lot of money. Unfortunately, there's a reason that voice talent has gone down. It's because you can absolutely get better stuff for less than ever before, because it's a commodity. I mean, seriously, you talk 30 seconds in, do you really think that's $1,000? I don't know, right? That's the challenge. It's a commodity now. So don't be shy. Fiverr, ask your friends, and then do it yourself.
Okay, Craig?
And I did just that. I have probably the best voice in National Speakers Association open my show. Scott McCain, who's got a beautiful, deep, buttery, he's the Morgan Freeman of NSA, introduces my podcast to, you know, in this beautiful way, and then it goes into a series of clips. Anytime I say something or something happens that I think is a nice little sound bite that sounds funny, during those editing sessions, I'll just make a quick little, you know, 5-second, 2-second sound bite and throw it into a folder. Now, I may never use that again, but if it's something that's interesting, then I have a series of those, and then I just do an intro. And I always try to set up what the conversation's about. I'm very introspective on these, not necessarily where I'm like Marc Maron, where I'm talking about my life and all these miseries and things like that, but I try to put it in perspective of what I think of the subject. So when I have Patrick Almond on talking about internet marketing, the first thing I talked about is how I'm not good at internet marketing, I'm not the best person to talk about it and my problems and struggles with internet marketing. And then that will lead right into the interview. And I try to keep them as short as possible because the bumpers, like Phil said, they, not only are they annoying for the listener, they're not that fun for someone who doesn't like to listen to themselves. I prefer one-on-one interviews, talking to human beings. I do not like to sit there and talk when nobody else is listening, or just do a monologue. So I try to make it short, a minute or two, get right to it, because that's what people really want to hear. And then a couple plugs up in the front if I can. And then at the very end of the show, I will do an outro where I, you know, thank the guest. But then I also plug everything about the podcast, where to find it, iTunes, things like that. I also allow the last minute of my actual podcast interview to let the guest plug themselves. This way I don't have to worry about what website do they want me to go to, send them to. What do they really want me to say? And usually do they want me to word it in a certain way? And I just say, so Patrick, where can people find you if they want to hire you? And then you can give your spiel. That takes a lot of pressure off me. They say it the way they like. They're happy with it. Off it goes.
Gotcha. Okay, we're getting close to our end time here. I was going to wrap up with, besides your own podcast, and Phil, I'll start with you here. What are three other high quality podcasts that you think, maybe even one or two, that you think people should listen to learn how to do a really good podcast? So we already know that yours and the Shut Up Show was a good one. What other ones do you listen to when you're not listening to, you know, your own, or you're listening to Craig's great podcast?
Besides Craig, I certainly like the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. That's with Srinivas Rao. Really good show. We must mention that guy in every episode we have a Shut Up Show. He's really good and really inspiring. I learn a lot from Srini all the time. Dave Conry's Creative Business Podcast, also really, really good. He's at freshreg.com. I'm a big fan of Dave's. And then if Chris Brogan, when he podcasts, Chris Brogan is really a strong podcaster. I really enjoy listening to Chris. He's got a really easy voice for me to listen to, and I really enjoy that. And then I'm just going to add one more, and that's Pat Flynn has a podcast as well. Pat Flynn is the smart passive income guy, but he's got some really good stuff on there about how to podcast and different things. So I encourage you, check him out, smartpassiveincome.com, and see what he's got.
Gotcha. How about you, Craig? What do you listen to?
Well, I actually don't listen to a lot of business podcasts because but I'll give you two podcasting ones that I listen to. These are the only two that I listen to, and they're really helpful, especially if you're just starting out. You can go to their backlog and get some really good tips, and that is The Podcaster's Studio with Ray Ortega, and he also has a Podcaster's Roundtable, which gets podcasters from around the internet together, and they have a topic each week that affects podcasters. So one is about how to do podcasting, and the other one is more of what is the community dealing with, and what are some things you can learn. But I listen to a lot of fun, interesting comedy ones like Mark Maron's WTF, Doug Loves Movies, which is great as for just a fun podcast to listen to. And if you want to understand the style and learn and hear from different people, The Nerdist is a great one to a format to follow. And that's the last thing I want to say about formats is if you listen to podcasts and you like a podcast, steal their format. You don't have to steal their podcast, but steal their format. If you like what Phil and Bernie do, you can do it yourself. You just don't call it the Shut Up Show, and don't call yourself Phil and Bernie. But their format of how they set up, like with WTF, he comes in and talks about it. He goes to the interview, and he talks about, you know, how things were after the fact. And that's the kind of the format that I stole. But not everybody does that. The round table, they just get into it and they just talk in a pretty much a chaotic fashion of asking questions in a dynamic, fun way. But it's interesting. So if you find a format you like, if you like a podcast very much, don't be afraid to copy that format.
Gotcha. And I'm going to drop one that I like. The one from a gentleman named James Schramko at superfastbusiness.com. He is in the internet marketing niche like I am. But every single one of his podcasts are, he has the audio, which is up on iTunes. He has the video, which Phil talks about. And for those of you that know me, I'm very much into repurposing. So he has video, he has audio. He then usually gets them all transcribed into text. And then I'm looking at his website right now, what he also does is he has chapter markers or time markers that he puts on the website where he covers a particular topic. And that's one of the things you can do with Auphonic when you're actually recording with Auphonic is you can put chapter markers while you're talking to see when you were talking about a particular point. So I'm looking at James Schramko's latest one, and it's an hour long, but you know, every 5 or 10 minutes he says, oh, this is where we were talking about this topic, or this is where we were talking about this topic. And I've listened to his recently on a 2-hour road trip to Tulsa and back and learned all kinds of stuff. So I only have, that's the only one that I can offer right now. And Pat Flynn's also a good one. And what normally happens is when people start talking, when people have a podcast, and this is, we're getting kind of meta here, is when they get really good at their topic, they end up talking about podcasting and how they got into podcasting and the equipment they use. So I'm sure someplace buried in Pat Flynn's archives, he has a podcast about podcasting. Everyone gets meta at some point in time.
Yeah, we almost have to, right? Because people ask the question. Just like here, I mean, we're podcasting about podcasting, right? People ask the question. So anytime that you have more than one person, people ask some questions, and so I think that's important.
Gotcha. Okay, it's 11:01 Central Time. I want to wrap up here. And real quickly, Craig, can you remind us about your podcast again, sir?
I'll send you the main one, realitycheckpodcast.com. The new season, our fourth season, starts on February 25th. And as always, we'll be doing our Oscar preview. That's why it's coming out on the 25th, the Tuesdays. Comes out Tuesdays every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Central Time. But as always, you can find past guests like Patrick Almond, Bill Gerbyshek, Roger Corville, who's in the chat room. David Dye is coming up to the season already. We recorded his. So there's a lot of great things. And if you know anybody that would be good for the podcast who has a unique topic, you know, email me, craig@speakercraigprice.com. I'm always looking for new, interesting folks.
Okay, how can we find you, Phil?
Well, so the easiest way is our podcast is theshutupshow.com. Theshutupshow.com. You need the "the." Somebody else scanned the other domain. And find us there. And then a lot of times, if you want them as they happen, you can find me on Google+. Just circle, it's Google, I think it's google.com/plusphilgerbyshak. So you have to use my whole name. Otherwise, I'm Phil Gerb everywhere else. And I tweet about them, Facebook them, LinkedIn them, whatever the heck. So search for Gerbyshak in iTunes if you want the podcast.
Gotcha. And I'm Patrick Allman from allaboutfocus.com. And most of you have found this the information about this broadcast via our Facebook group. We have a growing Facebook group where we talk about all things online marketing. We do it in the NSA EPEG Facebook group, but there's also another Facebook group called Speaker Online Marketing, which I would encourage you to join. I'll put the link in the chat room afterwards. Gentlemen, thank you for your time this morning. It's been a pleasure talking with both of you. And for the rest of you watching, like I said, these are the two guys that I think of first when I think about how do I get a good podcast done. And they did a great job on the one I did with Craig. And he's very easy to talk to. And he makes it very, very easy to do a podcast. Makes you want to come back and do another podcast. So you know, what we might do later at some point in time, if anyone's interested in it, drop this in the chat room, is we might consider doing one where we go a little bit more in depth in either some of the technical items or some of the format items. I'm very open to doing some other webinars or even live audio-only podcasts where we get into some more detail and depth for those of you that maybe already have something. You just want to learn, you know, after Craig's done 100-some-odd episodes, you know, what's he learned to make his a little bit more engaging, a little more interesting. But outside of that, I'm going to leave the chat room open at allaboutfocus.com/live for a little bit. But I'm going to end the recording in the formal part of the webinar. And thanks again, gentlemen, for your time today.